Blog Talk Radio. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Tonight we're running a little later. Tonight's rescheduled episode, is titled My 5-Point Plan to Survive and Thrive During the Holidays. And it's rescheduled because we actually had the show. It was a wonderful show. It was about a month ago. And it sounded like I was broadcasting from the inside of a cornflakes box. I had a lot of problems with the audio. So we had to just can the whole show, and here we are doing it again. My hope is that if there's any problem with the audio, I've gotten a new headset working on the whole thing, that you will let me know. You'll raise your hand and let me know. So what I'm going to be talking about tonight, we're about 2 weeks after Thanksgiving, and we're in the home stretch for Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and New Year's. And so there's a lot going on for a lot of people all over. What I will be talking about, and hopefully having a conversation with some callers in, is how you can approach the holidays with less stress and with more joy and meaning. And it's a big challenge for a lot of people because everyone gets caught up in their ideas about the holidays, but then the reality often takes them by surprise and there's a lot of disappointment. Now, one brief technical issue. Your toll-free call-in number is 877-497-9046, in case you get disconnected. And all callers will be muted unless you have a question or a comment, or you just want to participate in the conversation, in which case, press the 1 key on your phone to be in line to join me on the air. And I think what I'll do tonight is take questions and comments as they come in tonight. Now we already have somebody who wants to join us, so I'll bring this person on to the air. Hello there. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hi. Hello? Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Yes. My name was Sarah, and I apologize, Susan, for calling you so early on in the show. I thought you might want to know that the audio was not good for a few moments earlier on, but it seems to have corrected itself. I thought you might just want to know that.
Okay,
It wasn't really a question. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. What I found in testing this new headset is that it gets crackly for a while if I move it at all, but as long as I'm totally still, like a sphinx, everything is fine. But do let me know. Let me know if you have any other questions at any point, and I can actually leave you on the air if you want to stay on with me, because this is an open mic show. So let me just tell you a little bit about the show. What I've noticed in my practice as a psychotherapist and in my personal life is that people are often very anxious or sad, anticipating family contact around the holiday time. There's very often feelings of loneliness. Sometimes there's been a family crisis. Maybe somebody has died or somebody's very ill. There's often excitement about reconnection. There's a whole mix that goes into it, a whole mix of feelings and attitudes. And what I've seen is that it can really set people up for unrealistic expectations, avoidable stress, and it can really undercut possibilities for connection. So I thought I would do this show to share with you 5 things that I have found that if you do, and it's mostly mental work, that can really help set you up for a better time during the holidays, or for any time of year, for that matter, that feels very emotionally laden. And the first thing that I would recommend is that you do the mental work. And what does that mean, doing the mental work? It means connecting, firstly, with your feelings of anticipation about the holidays. So what are you feeling? Are you excited? Are you sad? Are you feeling, you know, dreading kind of a sense of loneliness? Are you anxious? So try to just connect with what's going on with you on the front end of things. And then I would encourage you to see if you can attach any of these feelings to past events, good or bad. So, for instance, if you're very anxious, are you remembering fights, you know, family, a lot of family struggle, family conflict in past holidays? Was somebody, was there a lot of drunkenness or somebody who felt really out of control to you? Are you feeling maybe a little irritated as you anticipate the holidays because maybe in the past there was a lack of participation? Or are you feeling particularly sad because maybe there's been a death in the family? I remember the first time, the first Thanksgiving after our father had died, when it was just such an uncomfortable, weird feeling, and it was kind of the unspoken, it was the elephant in the living room. Nobody would dare sit in the seat that had been his, and we all knew that we were kind of gritting our teeth trying to get through the first season without him, and that there was this kind of undercurrent of sadness. So I'm encouraging you to think about that and see if you can make the connection and pinpoint where it's coming from. Then what I would encourage you to do is just to kind of own and legitimize any ambivalence that you have about the holidays. I find that people have a lot of trouble just kind of giving themselves permission to feel whatever they feel, that there's so much pressure to be up and to have fun and have a good time and for everything to be just lovely, that I think there's a lot of denial often for people that it's just not so, it doesn't feel so entirely pleasant. So just to recognize that whatever ambivalence you may feel probably is rooted in something that is very reasonable and sound. And one thing that can be helpful in doing this is to look at, as you look at your ambivalence, try to go a little bit deeper. And I would encourage you to look at your expectations. And I think the best way you'll get to your expectations would be to start exploring what your shoulds are. And I think everybody has a whole set of shoulds about the holidays, and it might sound something like this, and feel free to you know, participate if you have anything you want to share. So it might be, I should host this event without needing help. That's a very common one that particularly women have, that I should be able to do this by myself. I shouldn't have to burden other people. Or I should invite so-and-so. If I'm inviting Aunt Sadie, then I have to invite her kids, and her kids are out of control, but I should do it. Or I should make spectacular food. I have to outdo myself in terms of last year. It just should wow everybody. Or I should act like I'm part of the family. This is a very big one I will often see with clients, that even though maybe there's a lot of family disconnection or a lot of family strife, that somehow I should act like everything is just fine, and I really need to kind of pretend that everything is just terrific. So these shoulds can really be very burdening for people. And what I'm inviting you to do is not only to identify the expectations that you have of yourself, but see if you can identify the expectations that others have of you, because that's often a very a strong part of the scene. Caller, I can't remember your name. What was your name?
Sarah? Yes.
Oh, sorry. You sounded like you just had a crash. Do you relate to any of this, you know, an experience of expectations and what one feels like one needs to do? Does that resonate with you?
Not an expectation of what I need to do, more of what was and what isn't.
Okay.
What it used to feel like and what it doesn't feel like now.
Very good point. Okay, so for you, it's more about maybe the disconnect between an idealized past holiday season and the reality of the very flawed, imperfect one that's about to unfold?
Completely, exactly.
Okay, and so what does that create for you?
Sadness.
Okay. Okay, so there's a kind of grieving that happens for you, a little bit of grieving around that disconnect. It's not going to be like it used to be.
Yes. If I may, for instance, the other day, I live in New York City, and I was walking down Fifth Avenue, which is the quintessential Christmas, you know, around Rockefeller Plaza and Saks Fifth Avenue with all the decorations in the windows. And I was very aware that it didn't feel the same for me, and I tried to tap into my feelings. Why do I feel so uncomfortable? And it was as though I had an epiphany, because I know every year it just doesn't feel the same as when I was a child. The magic doesn't feel like it's there anymore. I think it represents a sense of loss and an innocence, and that things change. It's representative that everything changes in life, and even your feelings can change. And that maybe those feelings that I had as a child, they're replaced with different feelings as an adult about the holiday. But it really represents a sense of loss and really waking up that not everything stays the same. Does that make any sense to you?
Absolutely. Holidays can really highlight that. It's one of those times of year, it kind of punctuates where we are now. People often use holidays as a reference point to where they've been and where they are now. And it can really bring up where I was when I was 8 or 10,
yes.
We were as a family when I was 12, et cetera, and the difference can be really startling. So it certainly sounds like for you, I mean, you're bringing up a very good point about that they're often, the holidays can be sadness. And then, you know, one of the points I'm making here is that would be very important for you to kind of own that. And to begin to look at how you want to respond to that, how you want to take care of yourself around that. And, you know, that gets to something that I'll be covering in a few minutes. But I think that's a really important point, because that is probably much more pervasive for people, a sadness than most people own. Do you know what I'm saying?
I can certainly relate to that. And I was very aware of that while it was happening to me. And then I started to feel unappreciative. Well, you know, that's very negative. You can replace some of those feelings and those experiences with different ones. But there's still a part of me that wants it to be as magical and as special. And that's probably saying something about who I am and where I am in my personality as an adult, that I want certain things to stay the same and just as innocent. And it's really, as I said before, it's a waking up. It's a loss of innocence in some ways, that things do not stay the same. And that does not have to be bad.
Okay.
It does not have to be a bad thing.
It doesn't have to be bad. But it certainly sounds like in this scenario that you might want to look at what, and I'll be encouraging people to anticipate, you know, different scenarios, good and bad. How can you get through the holidays minimizing the sadness and incorporating change in a way that's welcome? You know, so what kind of new rituals so that you punctuate the change as something positive rather than the change as just loss? Thank you for your comment. I have another question here, and I don't know if it relates to this particular issue. Hello, caller. Can you say your name and where you're calling from?
Hello. My name is John. I'm calling from Connecticut.
Hi, John.
Hi. Hello, everyone. I actually had a comment related to last caller's question. I believe it was Sarah. I've had a similar experience of the holidays feeling slightly less magical over time, and I think a big part of that for me has been the fact that it's not done up as much as it once was. You know, when I was a kid, there was a lot of fanfare around the whole thing. There was a Christmas tree. There was all the things associated with the holidays and idealized them. And as I get older, my wife and I do not as frequently do it up as much, and there's not as much attention that goes into it all. And I think maybe part of keeping the magic alive is every now and then going the extra mile, not being lazy, you know, getting a tree, getting a menorah, whatever it is, and really just adhering to all the traditions and giving some energy. And I think that's something I want to try to do this year personally.
Okay, so it sounds like you're really trying to do your best to preserve, a lot of the excitement and the specialness of what you remember in the past, but with some new rituals. And
yeah.
And that obviously for you, you're saying, it sounds like you're saying something similar to what Sarah said, that there's, you know, tinged with the excitement about the holidays is a sense of loss.
Right, and you know, it's not really new rituals so much as revisiting old rituals, because I think as time goes on, we all see the holidays become more commercialized, bastardized, and it takes the special quality out of it. And so I think revisiting some very old rituals.
Yes, absolutely.
Giving it all you got. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, caller, if you want to share any more questions or make any more comments, I don't know if you're talking on a speakerphone. It's kind of broken up. Are you on speakerphone or you're
I'm actually driving. You can mute me now.
Oh, all right. So you might be driving through a bad tower area, but
okay.
Thank you for your comment. I think it brings up a very good point about leaning into traditions that have been meaningful and the whole value of tradition and making new traditions, which ones you want to preserve. And, you know, what you're getting into is the whole point about what's the meaning of the holidays to you and how we each need to kind of hold on to that in the face of such blatant commercialism. I know I personally was a little horrified hearing that Thanksgiving night was the beginning of Black Friday, that it was no longer just a family day. And so that I think our traditions are being kind of chipped away at, and we're kind of encouraged by the media and by, the culture to kind of go along with a more commercialized view of what the holidays are. So I think you're right. It's really important to tune in internally. Where do I and we find meaning in the holiday? What do we need to preserve, and what do we need to do that would feel new, that would feel really meaningful? Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
Now, one thing, I was talking about expectations, and so I think it's really important to identify your own expectations of yourself, and also to identify expectations. Try to connect with what you think other people expect of you. So it might be, and I remember having a few sessions about this with clients. Well, they expect us to go, even though they have dogs and it's a very allergic place and everybody smokes. We have to go. Or a so-and-so in the family doesn't see the legitimacy of us making alternate plans, or my mother or my father or my siblings will expect me or us to go to church this year. So see if you can connect with your internalized sense of what other people's expectations are of you. And then I think it's going to be really important to look at it and make some decisions about how much of these holidays are going to be for myself and my significant other, if I have one, about accommodating everybody else's agenda versus what, where do I need to and where do we need to honor what feels true to us. And inherent in that decision is the fact that you cannot make everybody happy all the time, that you're going to need to make some choices that might not always be so popular. And we have another caller. Hello, caller. Can you say your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, I'm Lowell from Vermont.
Okay. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine.
You know, I think one of the other things we have to consider is that, you know, the holiday has really changed in many respects in the last 10, 15 years, in that, you know, because of the economy, people are working more and more hours, making less money, and all of the traditional things that we would really love to enjoy, like decorating our yards and putting out a lot of lights and making beautiful dinners and, you know, having the fire going and having a beautiful Christmas tree, are just out of reach for some people. And so in that sense, I think we almost have to reinvent a holiday while things are so bad economically. It really has, I think, had an enormous impact. And, you know, finding that reinvention, I think is difficult for a lot of people because they want to live up to the old traditions and the joy of Christmas and even the commercial aspect of Christmas, of opening all the presents that are loaded under the tree that are just out of reach. And so how do people cope with that? I wonder if any of the other callers or you have any input in terms of that thought.
Well, I'm leaving our callers on the line. Do either of you other callers who have come on the line have any thoughts about that?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, either of you.
Hi, it's Sarah again. I think for me and the people I know, it's not as much the expectation that I have, but it's the expectation of what society, how our culture has put an expectation and an idea in our head, this is what it should be, and if it's not, there's something wrong. That's how it feels for me. I don't think I put as much expectation myself. I have an expectation that I will feel the same, but it's not so much in the doing, and I think that's part of the problem. I think everyone gets so busy that they forget to just be present and be with each other, and they get very caught up. And I think your other caller, the gentleman who was calling from the car, I think he brought that up, that it's not so much, I lost my train of thought. It's a very charged thing for me to talk about this. It really is. And so I'm very sorry. I totally lost my train of thought.
It's very stressful thinking about how society is cut into.
Well, there's something very sad about it, and maybe you said it, or maybe your current gentleman who's on the phone, Lowell, that is something that I've become very aware of, that it's not as much anymore about how I view it, what it should be like, but everyone running around, and it's almost dictating what you should be doing and how you should be feeling, and it's very far from what really should be. It's really about being with one another, and it makes me take a step back and look how we don't really cherish each other enough. We don't cherish the moments. We're celebrating, and half the time I think we don't even know why we're celebrating or what we're celebrating. And I'm probably not making myself clear, so forgive me.
No, you are. It sounds like it feels that you're sharing with Lowell a sense that it becomes that we can so easily succumb to societal pressure and everything becomes either automated or just so stressful because we're being so crunched that we have an idea about how, what we want, but there's such a crunch on our time and our resources and so little external support for what we want that it feels like a big logjam.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Lowell, I'm wondering, how have you handled that dilemma, your experience of society and how it sort of dictates things as opposed to your own internal sense of how it should be?
Well, you know, I'm not really even feeling that it's the dictate of society that bothers me. I think what I find difficult is that I enjoyed all the commercialism. I enjoyed being able to put presents under the tree, and it was a special time of the year, and yeah, of course, it was kind of commercial, but it was kind of fun, too. It was kind of fun getting those presents, and in this economy, I don't think people can do that, you know, and it's very stressful because they can't enjoy Christmas in the way they used to. They don't have the time to do, you know, the decorations and the beautiful dinners and the special things they used to be able to do. And, you know, so coping with that is a matter of, I think, just saying, hey, this is where the economy is at. This is where my economy is at. And so, you know, I'm in this with a lot of other people. And enjoy the simplicity and the free things on some levels without seeming cheap, as you may have in the past, of seeing the lighting of the Christmas tree in the town square and going to local concerts and snowshoeing and simply doing things with your friends and family on that level more than on that commercial level. But it seems like on some levels, it's a reinvention of what Christmas used to be, at least for the moment, at least a year or two. And so my coping with it would be to really try to do those types of things and encourage the people around me to do them. And I think people will really enjoy that.
Well, you're getting to a very important point that I would have made later in the program, but we might as well get to it now. Which is, I think, to try to create a vision around, given your resources, your available time, your finances, your energy, who's available to help, et cetera, to really kind of look at, number one, your resources for making a holiday season happen that feels meaningful, and taking a hard look at what that is, and then creating a vision around that, well, if we cannot do what we used to do when Charlie was 4 years old and we took out every ornament together, or we had an elaborate Hanukkah thing, if we cannot do that, then given where we're at now, what can we do? What could we do? But be thinking about what would be meaningful. And that's one of that's my second major point in this show, which would be to create a vision around what's meaningful for you. And what's meaningful now really needs to depend on what's realistic now. I would encourage everyone to do that. First internally, and then to do it with a partner if you have one, and to think about, well, if we don't have the resources for elaborate gifts, then could we, you know, maybe donate instead of giving like piles of gifts to each other, and we really used to like that. Could we still have presents under a tree, but maybe the presents be ways that we provide favors to each other? Or we together donate to a good cause. So in other words, how can you reconfigure it in a way that feels like it will have meaning and joy for you? And I think it involves a certain amount of flexibility. And as you said, Sarah, well, both of you are saying this, letting go. Letting go of, you all said it, you know, letting go of the you know, the memories of how it was, certainly cherishing that, but recognizing that, that things need to change as the times change and our energy levels and resources change. So that's a really big one.
This is John. May I add something there?
Okay, sure, John. What would you like to add?
You know, you're talking about accepting changes in our interpretation of holidays, but in my view, what's most fundamental and most important about the holidays, that hasn't changed at all. The idea being that the holidays are supposed to be a time that we're together, that we're connected with one another, and that we're,
right,
you know, revisiting our sense of values and you know, identity as families and whatnot. And I don't think that has to depend on the number or the cost of the gifts under the tree or anywhere else. I think doing anything that facilitates that sort of connectedness is really getting at the fundamental tradition of the holidays. So
I think that's
maybe it's a matter. Maybe it's a matter of finding other avenues to get there.
I think you're making an excellent point that connect with what's meaningful, and if you connect with what's meaningful, it doesn't always have to look the same the way it's played out behaviorally year to year. So if it's meaningful to spend some quality time with friends and family, there are many ways you can spend quality time with friends and family. If it's meaningful to honor certain traditions, the traditions can be fluid. But so if you start at what's underneath all the activities that has meaning to you, there are many ways of playing that out. I think that's an excellent point. And that, I think, will maybe mitigate some of the sense of sadness, Sarah, that you might feel, because you still, in different ways, really aiming for the same thing. Do you know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yes.
The yes. rituals may be different, but if you value connection with family, then find a way to do it. It just may not be spending whole days together cooking and decorating trees and or going to, you know, religious services or spending scads of money on concerts. There are many ways you can connect with family. And so I think that's really a very important point. One other thing that I encourage people to do, you know, as you prioritize what's, it's obviously really important to prioritize what's most important. That's what we're talking here about here, and to be realistic about what's achievable. I say to people, less is more. Most people in my experience around the holidays have way, way too much. They're much too ambitious in terms of what they think they can accomplish. So let's say one of the values is to kind of reconnect with friends you haven't seen in a while. The list is too big, or they schedule too many events in one day, so then they're spending the entire day on the road. I work with a number of clients whose Thanksgiving was horrible because the entire day was running around from relative to relative and then trying to pack some friends into the bunch. So basically they were on the road having these little mini visits. So I encourage people, I say less is more. And if you have less resources financially or less energy, think of an event with people. It doesn't have to be a giant event. There can be less people, less food, less time, less fancy. I think you'll be more present for the smaller, subtle moments if you don't try to overdo. Overdoing seems to be the undoing of a lot of people at the holidays. What that requires is that you're basically letting go of some fantasies about what's achievable and about what you can do. And you're also checking your perfectionism. I know a lot of women in particular feel like they need to leave no stone unturned, and I'm guilty of this. There have to be, you know, bouquets everywhere, and everything has to be completely spanking clean. Everything has to be perfect. And then when you think about it, why? You're not doing a shoot for Home and Garden. The value, again, here, connecting with the underlying value, is to spend quality time with the people that you love, if that's your idea for the holiday. One other thing, and I don't know how much the three of you relate to this or anybody else who's on the line relates to this, is, and probably a very hard thing for a lot of people, is to pre-decide on a spending limit and stick to it. I know my husband and I, every year, we make these promises to ourselves and each other, and we almost never keep them. And then it feels awful because one person spent maybe $100 or $150 more, and then the other person feels like, oh boy, my, you know, what I did was measly. But not only a spending limit for gifts, but a spending limit in terms of activities. Very often people want to go to multiple events. And nowadays, I don't know where the rest of the callers, you know, who are on the line live, but you've got to, just one show can be $200 for two people. So to be very aware of, you know, what's our idea? Again, what's our vision for the holiday? And what are the kinds of things that will require a financial expenditure? And what would be comfortable for us? And are we putting our entire holiday on a card? Are we going to wake up in January and hate ourselves because we went overboard or we didn't honor what was manageable at the time? Is this something, you know, the three of you were all still on the line. Is this something any of you can relate to as a dilemma?
Well, I think in many respects what you're saying is to be happy with yourself and where you're at and with the people you love and not look over your shoulder at what somebody else may be able to do or may be doing or what the society is trying to dictate to us. Just be happy with where you're at with yourself.
I think that's important. Really, it's not
breaking up.
Yes, you're breaking up, Susan.
Uh-oh. I don't know why. Am I breaking up?
Yes.
Uh-oh. This drives me crazy. This is the main
Maybe you're moving too much.
Not moving. I'm trying to be, as I said, a sphinx. Am I still breaking up?
No.
Okay. It seems that if I even turn my head, let's not get me going on the audio problems for the show. That's the bane of my existence. Anyway, so if I can find a way to be perfectly still, that will probably fix things. But I think what you're saying is really to kind of tune in and to connect with what's meaningful to me and to my partner or the people I love and to not compare. That it sounds like, obviously, for you, Lowell, the comparisons can be really not much fun, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Okay. And you know what? There are always people who, if you look outside, who are doing seemingly more fabulous things. All you have to do is tune into the news, and you now see what people are doing with the lights, so that if anybody feels good about the lights they do outside their house, they tune into they now have it on YouTube and the TV, you know, what other people are doing with the most fabulous lights. I mean, you can easily feel very kind of less than. And I think that's probably something I would add to my list. I think it's a good point to value your own, what you have decided is your vision, and it's your vision, and to not compare to other people's vision. There is no such thing. This is not a contest at the holidays, and I think a lot of people approach it as a contest, and that's always problematic. Another thing that I guess my fifth point here is a concept that Rick Hansen in his, I think it's a new book. Rick Hansen is the guy who wrote Buddha Brain. He just wrote a book called Just One Thing, and it's all about mindfulness practice and just being more conscious and awake for your life. And in the book, one of his key concepts is to be there for yourself and to really connect with how do I stand up for myself? How do I honor myself? How do I factor myself in? And in his book, he talks about it in a kind of micro way, you know, moment to moment. Am I tuning into what is manageable for me? Am I being a good friend to myself? And one of the points that he makes that I think is so true is it's kind of like that concept of when you learn when you're on an airplane ride, take your oxygen first. If you have to give, you have to take care of a small child or anybody who's incapacitated. What will I need for myself in order for me to be there for others? I think that is really critical. And I think most people, I don't know about most people, but a lot of people don't even give it a thought. I would encourage people to, if you can't think about what, it involves the feeling of being deserving, and you cannot imagine what you need for yourself because you're just unfamiliar with that, I would encourage you to invoke a good friend or an ally on your side. Try to imagine, what would my best friend be telling me to do to honor myself and take care of myself right now? What would somebody who loves me be saying if they were standing on my shoulder? What would they be encouraging me to do or not do? And that can be a very helpful exercise, because if your self-esteem is not great, if you don't feel deserving, if you're just not in touch with factoring in yourself into the process, it would be very hard for you to answer this question. So invoke a good friend or an ally. Then come the obvious being there for yourself behaviors. Factor in sufficient sleep. And I know that feels almost impossible for people when there are limited hours in the day and people who have to work and, you know, earn a living. And that gets to the other concept of scaling down and where less is more. If you're lopping things off your enormous list, there will be more time for sleep. If you decide on the front end, I'm going to commit to getting to bed by at least 11 o'clock every night so that I'm not running ragged, that would be a really good promise that you make to yourself. Obviously, being conscious and anticipating moderate eating and drinking, and regular exercise. I mean, these are the basics. And I think it's really important, again, for you create, if you're looking at your vision for the holidays, and part of your vision is to be with people and not stuff yourself with food so that you come out on the other end 10 pounds heavier and hating yourself, but your vision is to fill yourself up instead with good conversation and connection, then I think it's a very good idea to have a kind of game plan for, well, what am I going to do so that I'm going to eat healthfully during the holiday season? Do I need to cut out this or that? What will I allow myself to enjoy so I'm not being I'm not being compulsive about it? Or if you're someone who tends to overdrink, for instance, when you're anxious, it's a very good idea to have a kind of game plan about, well, do I do worse when I've had two glasses of wine, or am I really bad after a third? Then it's a very good policy to make a decision and a commitment to yourself to maybe have a drink limit, so that you are, again, preserving that vision that you and your partner have created. One of the things that I'm always kind of a Nazi about is regular exercise. And I try to, around the holidays, think about, well, how can we have nice breakfasts and brunches and time together within the family, but not in a way where I'm bagging my very much needed morning speed walks. That's the way I take care of myself. It's a way that gives me energy. I help regulate my moods. I don't think I'd be able to be a good therapist and be self-regulated and modulated if I didn't do that. I wouldn't be able to do it as well. So I know one of the things that helps me is to be thinking about, okay, well, when am I going to fit in my exercise so I'm not keeping a whole house full of company waiting while I'm, you know, I'm running around the neighborhood getting my cardio in. So again, it's kind of having a game plan on the front end. Now, do any of you callers relate to the self-care piece as important, or does that feel like that's just self-evident?
Well, it's important, and it might be self-evident. Is it practiced on a regular basis? No. You know, I wanted to say something while I've been listening to you for the last 45 minutes, that the things that I remember you talking about, I think you called it your five-point game plan to survive through the holidays. Is that the title of this show? Am I correct?
My five-point plan, yes.
Yes. And I think you mentioned do your mental work, you know, connect with your feelings, managing expectations, have a vision, how much money do you think, you know, have a game plan about what you're going to spend, being for yourself. And I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, you know, even if a person doesn't really enjoy or relate to the holiday season, in many ways, it sounds like it's a gift for all of us because it really requires a lot of inner work to get through a lot of this. And it's really work that we should work on, something that we should work on 365 days of the year.
Right.
Not just during the holiday. And it kind of was glaring at me while you were talking. You know, these are things that are very vital to move forward as a very happy and fulfilled and caring person in life, to keep all of these things in mind and work on them, correct? Do you agree with that?
You are absolutely right, and I think it's even more important. These are skills that you want to hone all year long, and you want to sharpen these skills all year long. I think it becomes so much more vital during the holiday times because the expectations and the, you know, our kind of internal kind of expectations and our visions about what the holidays should be like are so elevated. For instance, on a typical any old given Saturday and Sunday or Monday through Friday, we may just expect to get to work on time and do a good enough job and you know, make sufficient connections with people and be competent, blah, blah, blah. But around the holidays, that gets so amplified that I think it really calls upon us to do this, and it's mostly internal work, to do the internal work so that we don't come out with a sense of feeling so, so deflated. But you're making a great point. These are skills and behaviors that one needs to practice year-round. And, you know, the other part of that point is that if you are practicing them year-round and you're being mindful in these ways, you're not going to have to pull a rabbit out of a hat come the beginning of November.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, thank you. I find them very, very, very helpful. It feels like it's almost a guide how to live my life so I'm happier and I can make other people around me happier with these pointers that you gave, because they are super. And I think that's what I realized when the other day when I realized that the holiday for me just does not feel the same, and it's recognizing that maybe I have to let go of an expectation and an innocence, and that's a hard lesson to learn, and those are very heavy things to think about and look at and internalize. So I think you're right that everything is amplified around a holiday like, you know, Christmas and Hanukkah and Thanksgiving, because it brings back a lot of, it brings up so much stuff and it brings back so much stuff.
Yes.
And it's good to look at, it, but in the same token, it's painful to look at. That's
yes.
why I couldn't remember what I wanted to say before.
You were very filled with this. Yeah. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, comment. Now, one other thing, as you're being there for yourself, in Rick Hansen's words, I think that's really, and I don't know if I said this before, but to monitor your self-talk. Did I mention that? I may have. I'm so busy talking, I didn't think about what.
No, that, I don't think you did, Susan.
To monitor your self-talk. And this is, as you said, Sarah, this is one of these things that I think is important to do all the time, because self-talk can either be very energizing and encouraging and reassuring and calming and creative, or it can be devastating. So I would encourage everybody to, in a general way, do this at the holidays, though, to look at what are you saying to yourself. And are you down on yourself about certain things? Are you beating yourself up for mishaps or things that you didn't get to or things that weren't quite right? I would hope that everybody cuts themselves some slack, so that if you notice that you're starting to be very hard on yourself, again, put a good friend.
You're breaking up again.
I was moving. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Invoke a good friend.
No, you're going again.
I don't understand why. Let me move my microphone a little bit, okay? One sec. How's that?
Okay. Talk?
Yeah, I'm talking
good.
Now.
That's good.
So if you notice that you're beating yourself up, be thinking about what a good friend would say to you. And see if you can counter negative self-talk with something more affirming. Cut yourself some slack. And I think most important, when you're there for yourself, celebrate and savor the positives. We tend to, we all have, our brain is programmed with a negativity bias. And he talks about this in the book also, that we tend to learn from negative experiences. We get conditioned by them more readily than positive ones. We remember. We're primed to remember negative experiences more than positive ones. So we have a built-in negativity bias. And what I think is really important for everyone to do is to savor the positive moments, to train your brain to hold on to the things that were meaningful to you, so that they have as much, if not more, weight than the things that didn't go well. One of the ways that you can do that is to find humor in the mishaps, to have a sense of humor about, and I've seen people do this with weddings. I don't know if any of you have seen any of these hilarious videos about weddings that went awry. And, I mean, that's one of those key times when people have outrageous expectations for perfection. And it's so lovely to see people who, at least afterward, can kind of laugh when the tent fell apart and it started raining and, you know, everything was just went awry. But somehow they found goodness in it, and they were able to laugh at the experience and realize, you know what, we still got married, we love each other, and everybody we wanted to be there was there experiencing that thunderstorm with us. So to really dig in and find humor in what may go, quote, wrong. I mean, can any of you relate to that?
Humor is the best. It's the best bromide for everything. Without humor, you're lost. I know that when I lose my sense of humor, everything goes wrong.
Right.
Humor, absolutely. Humor just adds a different perspective on everything in life. You have to laugh at whatever circumstance. I can totally relate to that.
Yeah.
Really.
It really, what it does, I think, what this is really about, is about kind of accepting your own humanity and your own limitations. And,
you're breaking up again, Susan.
Okay. Let me keep talking and tell me if it feels like I'm breaking up. Accepting your own humanity and your own limitations.
You're breaking up. Yes.
Breaking up?
Yes.
All right. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get off this silly mic and just talk into talk through Skype into the computer. Tell me if you can hear me. One second. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. No, it's a little tender, but at least one.
No, no, no. No, no.
It's okay?
No, it was not okay. You should keep talking. I'll tell you if it sounds okay.
Okay. Well, I'm talking into the mic the computer. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. All right. I'm going to finish the program this way, and I'm going to have to see if I can adjust my expectations of technology here. In any event, we're going to have to stop. I can't believe we're going to have to wrap up. I thank you, you callers in, for your contributions and for, you know, the other people who are listening on the line. We had a number of you there. You know, I think this is a really important topic, and hopefully people will take away from this the fact that you can kind of carve out your own experience and you can tailor it to what works for you. So thank you, all you listeners and callers. And I just want to let you know that you can get more ideas about managing your life and your relationships if you go to my website, susanlager.com, where you'll find my blog. I have articles for sale on my store page. I have coaching programs for individuals and couples. And one of the articles that you can purchase is How to Avoid Disasters at Holiday Family Events. That was one of the original articles that I wrote. I think, you know, it dovetails very nicely with this program. You also, one piece of very exciting news is that you'll be able to, on the store page of my website, you can find my new workbook, which was just published in September. It's called I'm Talking, Are You Listening? Fix Communication Problems with Your Partner in No Time Flat. It's for sale on my site, and it's also for sale on Amazon.com as a paperback and as an ebook. You can, it's been formatted for Kindle, so you can get it there. And it's very inexpensive, and I think it's a kind of a distillation of the principles involved in good communication skills. And one other little piece of news is that I am right on the cusp of publishing the second book in the Couple Speak series called Become Relationship Smart Without a Lifetime of Therapy. This is my first announcement of that. That one is coming out at the end of January, so I'll keep you guys posted about that. And that's all about basic tools and skills and attitudes to have better relationships. So hopefully you'll all be, partaking of that. I'll be announcing where you can get that, et cetera. My next episode will be Wednesday, January 2nd, and the next one will be 8:30 p.m. And I haven't yet decided what the topic will be, but I will be announcing it. And I'm really hoping that you all have a really good holiday season, hopefully one that's better because of this program, and that everybody experiences lots of joy, lots of love, and lots of connection. Take care. Bye-bye.